Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Stop in and save big money on your next outdoor lumber project now at Menards. Menards has the largest selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber and decking, and it's easy to load in our outdoor lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store or on Menards.com. Check out our weekly flyer for more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Hello, hello, hello there, and welcome to Knife Talk, the number one podcast for knife makers. Hosted by myself, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, Mareko Momasi, and Jeff Fader of Fader Knives. How are you all?
I'm doing good. I don't get a good business rep. I don't get my...
You don't think these people know where you're from?
I don't know. People from might Momasi, be listening for the first time.
Momasi. Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm sorry. Just behind the curtain stuff here. I've literally just woken up. So bear with me. I'm slowly grinding, getting myself back up to speed. Momasi Fireworks. It is Mareko, yes. Momasi. Hello, Mareko. How are you?
Explosive. I'm doing well. So shall I just jump into my past week?
Go ahead.
Go for it. This is the ropiest start we've had in a long time.
We're doing awesome. I love it. Yeah. Going strong. Last week has been good. It's been busy. I just got back from Anchorage, not Africa, as Jeff was saying. Or wait, was Craig saying? Anyways. And it was good. I went up there to work with my friend Gabe Fletcher of Anchorage Forge, and he is also the owner of one of the best breweries in the world. And he had this idea. We've been working on it, and I flew up there, and we started hammering away. And we, over 3 days, we put in at least 40 hours of forging and grinding and restacking and cutting and welding billets back together. I think we went through at least 24 welding processes to create this kind of crazy pattern that we're really excited to hopefully reveal, as long as I'm not there to fuck it up. And let's see. Yeah. Otherwise I'm just kind of getting things ready for Blade Show and Europe. Cause I realize now I have just like a week essentially until Blade Show. And then I get back for 2 days before turning around and go to Ireland. So I have a class I'm teaching in Italy, which thank you for everybody who's, I think it, especially after posting or talking about it here on the podcast, and Jeff with the assist on getting it reposted over on Knife Talk, as well as just posting it in the world. The class is filled up really quickly, and there are just a few spots left, but otherwise we're going to have a good crowd in there, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. That's going to be happening in Tuscany, in the Florence countryside, just south of Florence, about 30 minutes, and at Oliver Goldschmidt's shop. It's a two-day gig. I believe it's the 29th and 30th. I gotta look at the calendar really quick. The 29th and 30th of June, and it's gonna be awesome. We're gonna have some like catered lunches and like delightfully delicious and light breakfasts, and we're just gonna get after it.
Nice.
But otherwise, I'm trying to think what else. I had a couple other notes. Calendars are printed actually. As we're recording this on Thursday, right after the podcast, I'm going to pick those bastards up. It has been a a huge rigmarole managing that thing. And I'm trying to decide if I'm going to do it again next year, because unfortunately there aren't a lot of printing options in the local area. And I like supporting our local businesses, but they're a little bit disorganized and disconnected from each
other. They suck. What you're saying is they suck.
It's just been such a hassle. Like, I send files, and I've already spent tons of time building, because we don't just use like a template. The only template we use is literally the days of the month, but we are using our own font and our own format for each month, and putting the names on and captions and ads and stuff like that onto the calendars, QR codes, all this shit. We edit the images. Some images are great right off the bat. Some are taken by the maker and they need a little work. So I'm in Photoshop fucking around getting those edited. I send all this stuff to the calendar printer and they look one way when I send them, and then they send back a proof and it looks different. And just like all the images, for whatever reason, something happens from the images that I sent to them to them building the calendar for the print file, that causes them to darken a shade, like a couple shades, actually. They darken quite a bit. It's surprising. And some knives are on dark backgrounds, and that makes a big problem, especially for those knives. And they're trying to, like, kind of get at me, like, it was something I did. They're like, oh yeah, if we have to get it back in there and do a bit of editing, it's going to cost another $75 an hour. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? This happened on your side. You did this. Fucking figure it out.
I'm guessing you're saving everything as RGB instead of CMYK with regard to the colors.
Oh, no, I'm not. I've been saving them as PNG files, but that last year they told us to do that.
Yeah, that's the format. Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a
CMYK. Oh, I'm curious.
Yeah, CMYK is the colors that they use for print.
You two dorks, listen to me. Listen to me. Fucking dorks.
We'll talk about it later. No worries.
This is the question I have that people want to know. Is this the last round or not?
Yeah, this is. I mean, yeah.
And, that's it.
Oh, like the last time I do calendars.
Yeah,
that's still in the air. I thought you were asking if this is the last like round of proofs and shit.
No, yeah, I'm saying, are you going to do this again? You have quite a, you know, you've done this now a number of years.
Yes, 6 years.
And I mean, is this it or not? I can't believe, here's what I can't believe. I can't believe the people who did it before can't fucking do the same thing they did the last time.
Yeah.
Explain it to me.
That's the other thing too. I don't get, like, they're saying there's an issue with the paper, and I was like, are you using different paper from last year? Because last year's paper was fine, and like they have no answers for me.
So will they? People who have calendars have them at Blade Show.
Yeah. So that's a good call. So people who, so what I would suggest is if you're going to be at Blade Show, come pick them up from me. I'm going to be actually back at the Even Heat booth, hanging out with Spence and the fam, and selling calendars from time to time. I'll get more specifics when those. It gets closer and coordinating with those guys, but yeah, we'll set up some time blocks where I'm back there kind of hawking the calendars, and they're a sponsor of the calendar, and so I'm very grateful to them kind of making a little bit of room for me to be able to hang out and chat with them and hopefully get some people back there to see their new kilns and the tempering kiln and all that stuff. If you're gonna be at Blade Show, don't buy one off the website. Come pick it up from me at the show. If you buy it through the website, the way their website goes is like it automatically charges shipping and shit and all that stuff. And it's a big pain in the ass to like go back, like go into the order and then cancel that and all that kind of stuff. And so we'll have it set up so you can just like hit me with Venmo or Cash App or whatever, and then we get you a calendar. And then you can cruise around the show and get it signed.
What about cold hard cash?
Cold hard cash is perfect. I'm good
with
that.
How much?
$25.
All right. There you go.
Standard calendar price. Actually, I don't know if that's standard anymore. I think a lot of calendars are going up. Anyways, print talk. Fucking
Jesus
print
Christ. What a fucking
they cost
hassle.
They cost more in a leap year.
I mean, it's like, goddamn. You know, thank God it starts at the starts in June.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're talking about December. I mean, Christ.
No, the whole June to May, that's actually what I wanted to do from the get, but I just I got some advice from people that were like, oh, just make it a standard calendar, and I'm like, no, I don't want it. It's not a standard calendar in the first fucking place.
No, so I'm gonna certainly do it not my now. Way from now on. It's like this is like the hottest ticket item, and it's impossible to get. Well, can't even get it made. These motherfuckers.
The printer, fucking printer. Craig, what have you been up to? How's the week been? How was your nap?
I've literally just woken up. So yeah, had a text from you guys a couple of hours ago saying, right, podcast tonight, all sorted. Yeah, all sorted. I take Buddy to bed. I fall asleep. Next thing you know, my wife is banging on the door saying, oh, wake up, you've got a podcast to do. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. So so I'm just trying to think what I've been up to the last week. Jeez.
Two weeks.
I've been in Wales. Yes.
Oh, yeah, music festival.
We went to music festival, and we took the kids to a music festival for the first time. So not Buddy, the little one, just the twins, so the five-year-old twins. And they absolutely loved it. We camped, and we had the full festival experience. We burnt in the sun one day, and we got rained on the next day. Yeah, smelly toilets, the whole thing.
Oh.
Yeah, they loved it. So yeah, it was good, really good fun, really good fun, but just so, so tiring. So, so tiring. But yeah, really, really good fun. So we got back, what was that, 2-3 days ago. And obviously I'm still recovering because I just need a little power nap before the show. So, yeah.
How are the 355s doing?
We're doing very, very well. Very, very well. We head to the studio in August. We've got a big announcement that we're making tomorrow, which actually I can say now because people won't know it. Won't hear this till Monday. We're playing a huge, huge festival called Festival 2. And we are, we're on just before the main headline act. So there's going to be, 12,000 people there, and it's going to be, it's going to be pretty cool. So,
oh my God.
So that's in July. So we've got a couple of festivals lined up we're playing. It's all good. It's all very good. All positive stuff.
Are you going to 12? Is that the most you've ever played in front of 12,000 people?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
There's a lot of people. Yeah.
Will you take a power nap beforehand?
Only if Buddy's around.
The kids aren't coming. My wife is coming, but the kids aren't coming. So I'm sure I'll need a power nap. I'm an old man. I'm sure I'll need a power nap.
Just don't let your room to weird Spanish guys or Chinese guys.
Exactly.
Your room?
Spanish guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
As a callback.
Cheeky, his name was.
Chico Rodriguez? I know.
Cheeky.
I know.
But no, all good. I'm only here for next Friday, so a week tomorrow. Me and my wife and I, it's our 10-year anniversary, so we're heading to London for the weekend. But then we have a cheeky gig on the Saturday night with the 355. So.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, 10 years, it's flown by, absolutely flown. And we were just thinking, my God, can you believe it's 10 years? It's like, it feels like it was last week, but then we think, we've moved countries. We've got 3 children. Our lives are completely different to what they were 10 years ago. So, yeah, it's mad.
Look at you, 10 years.
They'd never said it would last.
That old chestnut. Yeah. How long have you been married, Mareko?
It'll be 10 years in August.
Oh, wow. You both, you 10-year youngsters.
Ah. How long youngsters. For you?
For me, 23 years.
And what was the date?
May 19th, 2001.
Oh, I put you under stress.
No way, baby. I never fall under pressure, my guy. No, I'm fucking, I'm built for
you. Could
pressure.
Have made up any date then. I wouldn't have known.
You know what? I used to say May 20th, and then my wife's like, it's not May 20th. I'm like, yeah, well, that's when we went on the honeymoon. So I always used to remember it as the 20th, but it's, May 19th. All right, look at us. These wedding anniversaries are sponsored by Evenheat, manufacturer of the finest heat treat ovens available, ladies and gentlemen. To get yourself one of them Evenheats, go to evenheat-chillin.com, check out what they got going on. Get everything you need hard. I mean, you get your wedding anniversary, you need to get everything hard. Get yourself an Evenheat and get your shit hard. I'm with you. Going to see y'all Spence down at Blade Show. And Evenheat are the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. Evenheat-chillin.com.
They certainly are. Certainly are.
There you go.
So what's been going on for you then, Jeff? What's been happening?
We're getting ready for Father's Day sale, or preparing people for Father's Day. We're doing new stuff. I got a meeting with somebody. I might do a collaboration with tomorrow. We're doing some other collaborations with people. We're just trying to, you know, stocking the shelves. And I got called a gatekeeper recently.
A gatekeeper.
And I thought we could talk about it. And it's not just about me being a gatekeeper, but the concept of gatekeeping. I hear this every so often in the knife-making community. I must say that the knife-making community is a wonderful, wonderful supportive community filled with people who are helpful and kind, but they're also a bunch of fuckers. So I just want to make a clarification. I love you guys. I'm with you. But some of you, you need to get plunked, okay?
So give us some context.
I'm going to give you vague context. I'm going to give you vague context, but somebody wanted extra help on serrated knives. What questions I get a lot. And I try to be helpful, but at the same time, in my mind, I try to say, you know, you should try some things out. A lot of times people want exact answers.
Sure.
And exact answers aren't going to help you understand where you're getting. So sometimes I'm on the, I wouldn't say vague, but it's almost like, here's the direction you want to go. That's the direction you should go. And if I don't give hand-holding questions, it becomes, you know, how we've talked about how texting becomes a little bit understandable. Maybe people miscommunicate, misread how it is.
Yeah.
Well, then I got called, and this is actually a few weeks ago, so I kind of kept it for a while. It didn't seem like it would make a lot of sense.
I see.
But it was, I was said, well, you don't have to be a gatekeeper about it. And that's when I just stopped replying, you know, did no blocking, stopped replying. And I think about it, I thought about where the first serrations, you know, when we first, if you look back to episode 2 of Knife Talk, when Craig and I are talking about, he and I were talking about serrated knives, and I'd never really made one before. And Craig, you were talking about, I wonder how to do a serrated knife. We were talking about it.
Yeah.
I went through a number of different processes to get there. And then I ultimately, Mareko came to the shop, I don't know, a number of years ago, and then he showed me how he does serrated knives. And then I used some of his technique plus my experience as a fabricator, lining up pickets to punch holes in I would mark channel to punch for pickets. And I kind of like take a lot of different experiences, kind of put it together, figured out a system that works for me, and it works.
Yeah.
And I felt as though there was a lot of experience there, a lot of time in a metal shop, a lot of time with Mareko, a lot of time fucking around myself. And what I felt as though is that I put the time and energy to do it. And this person wanted me to just hand over the easy part, you know, without any of the hard part. And I started thinking about it for a while. And I said, imagine this. Imagine you own a restaurant and you're trying to change the menu up. And the guy down the street has got something on the menu that you think would be great at your restaurant. Send a message to the chef. Say, hey, listen, I really like what you got on your menu. Can you give me the recipe? And that chef says, look, you know, we spent a lot of time on this, and, you know, this is part of, you know, my experience all the time, all this stuff is just like, you know, I'm not going to give you the recipe.
Yeah.
And then you go, you're an asshole. You're an asshole for not giving me that recipe that I can use to sell to make money. I'm expecting you to give me all your information so I can make money. And if you don't, you're a gatekeeper. And it was a really one of those things where I was just like, yeah, fine. Then I'm a gatekeeper. Fuck you.
Mm. Yeah, it's a poor choice of word in that, isn't it? Calling it a gatekeeper. Because, I mean, you know, you can only need to look at the amount of hours we've put into this show where, you know, you and Mareko and myself, we share the knowledge that we have. So, yeah, that is poor. But I think you just hit the nail on the head when you said you had Mareko show you. You tried a few things out, and you worked out what works for you. Because, you know, depending on the tooling that you may have, depending on the style of knives that you make, and all that kind of stuff, it works for you. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work for everybody. So, like, yeah, you can give sort of vague tips, but when somebody's trying to drill you down to say, what exactly, what, you know, every single process, it's like, well, is there any point in sharing that stuff anyway? Because it may not work for them, you know?
But what do you think, Mareko, about the idea of what people's expectations of, and then they go to the idea of like, you're gatekeeping, that means you're keeping me away from this. What do you think of this whole idea? Because you hear gatekeeping everywhere. Like I saw a food reviewer and he's just like, oh, they're gatekeeping this oxtail recipe from us. It's just like, you know what? Fuck you. You know, no one's gatekeeping anybody.
Well, and it's also, like you said, it's your hard work. You're combining many different experiences. Like you say, experiences, nothing outranks experience. And you're combining those various inputs to create your own approach. And honestly, that's known as intellectual property. And it's like they want to take somehow deserve some sort of ownership for something you created for yourself in your process. You've developed your own process, but it is kind of funky. It's weird because we are in this kind of, at least in this knife making community, we are public figures in a way, and we do a lot through the podcast and outside of the podcast to help people. But there's still a lot of responsibility on people's own behalfs to do some fucking work. Honestly, I think, and now that you were kind of recounting the whole experience with you talking to Craig and then me and blah, 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 I actually think I listened to that episode and I was like, interesting. I've never done serrations. I wonder how you would do it. And guess what I did? I just found a fucking knife I had laying around the shop and I did it. I tried it, something. And I figured out what worked and what wasn't going to work. And it was with that information that I came over to your shop. I don't know if it was just kind of random. I came through or it
no,
was planned.
No, we were going to go.
You were showing off. You were showing off. You learned how to do it.
You and I were going to go down to the city. We were going to the city.
Well, here's the deal. Like, Jeff's my buddy and I wanted to help him. And so that's what we did. Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that. And we took the train down. That was great. It kind of comes back to this whole kind of weird sense of entitlement that people think they have for other people's ideas. And it's like, where does that even fucking come from? Like, somebody created an idea, an approach, or created a thing, came up with a thing. And then you feel now a sense of entitlement to that because that person, at times in the past, has been helpful with other stuff. But, like, you still got to do some fucking work.
Yeah, but you still get those emails or those messages or somebody says to you, hey, man, I really appreciate it. You're one of those guys who is really helpful to people. And there's this it's a thin line between being helpful and being an asshole. And it's that's the crazy part where it's this thin line. And I want to be helpful, but at the same time, it's like, and I've stopped doing steak turners because I did a twist of steak turners in the Knife Talk podcast. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, everyone's in the steak turner business. And it was just like, yeah, you know what? Fuck them. They can have it. But it was like, you know, all of a sudden everyone's developed making steak turners out of train spikes. It's just like, what are you, crazy? But at the same time, it's like, all right, well, I gave it out there and I can't expect people to not do it. You know, but at the same time, it's like, where do we stop and where do we start?
I think
driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on gelled Went windows in-store. Or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week. Now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
It's a sign of the times. It goes further than just, you know, people sharing knowledge. Mm-hmm. It's a case of people now growing up, and they've always had this, you know, the internet, this huge resource where they can find answers to everything immediately. And they get pissed off if they can't get an answer to something immediately, because there's always an easy route to something.
Right.
Always the easy route. Mm. And I think us sort of sharing stuff on this podcast, people may see that as an easy route. And let's face it, it has been, you know, and it is. It really is. But I think it does, people do need to show some sort of willing, you know, like, I've tried this, doesn't quite work. Would you mind just, you know, seeing what I've did wrong? You know, that's one way of framing a question, as opposed to, I'm thinking of doing this. Can you tell me exactly how to do it? You know? Well, and that seems to be what we get a lot of.
Here's the funniest part, and it's the real root cause of it all. It all stems from money. And it stems from, like, if you see these recipes online, remember there was a recipe online that was, you take the feta cheese and the fucking little tomatoes and stick it in the oven. Next thing, you know, you mush it around. It was like this. You see these viral recipes. Well, those are like, nobody's going into business with those. Nobody's like, you know, using them. Well, maybe some of them are, but it's like when you put out one of these recipes, there's no real like financial gain for other people. You know, it's just like, oh, now I'm making the fucking feta cheese tomato bullshit. You know, but when it comes to knife makers, everyone sees green and figures out how they can make some money. And then all of a sudden it's just like, there's almost a bit of pressure to get the answers done on a quick side. And then some people either helpful or they're, you know, they're gatekeepers. But it's all money. It always stems from money. It's like, listen, let's say this was Tai Chi talk. And you and I had a thing about Tai Chi, and we weren't making money out of doing Tai Chi, and we show people how to do it. We give everything away. We don't give a fuck. Fucking Tai Chi. What the hell?
Yeah.
But now it's like we're teaching people these, you know, things to help their business. And then sometimes it's not good enough.
Yeah. Mm. We've used the analogy millions of times now during the, well, 5, 6, 7 years of doing this show, of you don't see plumbers getting online and sharing, you know, the best way to use a wrench, and they don't go to, you know, the plumb show every year like Blade Show,
fucking,
you know,
plumb
they
show
just, the plumb show, but it's just full of plums.
Yeah.
You know, it's and it, but you know, but it is people's work, it is people's job, it is people's trade. I just think that the manner in which, you know, we do this show puts us out there for, you know, people it, expect
ultimately it's fine. It ultimately, I was just trying to figure out a way to have us have a conversation, because we haven't seen Craig in a while. So you know, I think what I try to do is everything comes from a place. Like, I have receipts for everything. You know, like all my decision making, I'm so excited. I just came up with a little version of my friction folder that's tiny. It's a tiny little friction folder. And I'm going to start, and it was based off of the friction folder, but then I made it very small because I wanted something very small. And I was looking at this little pocket razor blade that I like, but it's tiny. And I made it. Everything comes from a place, and it should be a sincere place. And I wish there was more of a place of sincerity, as opposed to I need to make some money and I need to know how to do this.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on. Whilst we're talking about the Plum Show next week, Dharma Steel are there. And I've had a message from Carly. They're doing a special promotion for Blade Show. 20% off everything on their web shop at dharmasteel.se. Custom billets and everything in stock for private customers with the code SHARPSUMMER20, and that's all lowercase. It needs to be lowercase, SHARPSUMMER20, all one word. And that's from the 6th to the 9th of June. So if you're looking for any Dharma Steel stuff, of course you should be anyway. Get in there and get that extra discount of 20% off. If you are at the show, they are on booth 738, same spot as last year, and I'm told they will have cold drinks and coffee. So head on over. Say hello to the guys there at Dharma Steel. They're great people. They make great, great steel. If you don't know what it is, go take a look at Dharma Steel SC. They're Dharma Steel AB on Instagram. And see the kind of stuff people are making with it. Dharma Steel's real special stuff.
And Mreko and I and Lawrence Lake will be there at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
On Saturday, right?
on Saturday.
At the Dharmasteel booth. Right. Nice. Okay.
So cool. Come over and say hi. We'll meet Carly. Have some fun. Good old Carly. Oh, yeah. Whatever she said, whatever Carly wants, Carly gets.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So we have great questions. We have awesome feedback. And we got another great round of Would You Rather? Their newest, our newest great bit.
Okay, let's start with some feedback, then we head into some questions this time.
Okay, guys, if you want to send in your feedback, here's what you got to do. You have to send, you got to go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and you're going to send us a message through the DMs, and that's the best way to do it. So the first one comes from Ronald Handmaids, and it's a quote, and I'm going to have to do some explaining, I guess. Nobody expects the double-ended dildo. That's the quote, because
nobody expects it, that is
true on many points. Nobody expects double-ended dildo. That was because Mareko and I were talking about if we had all the money in the world and we got bought out, and how would you feel about it? And Mareko posed the point, well, what if they turned Momasi Fire Arts into Momasi Fire Arts and double-ended dildos? And that was quite I was distracted, frankly, and I was distracted by that. That was
driving away, half listening. Then all of a sudden, comes up with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was distracted, and then I was just like, "Yep, yeah, you threw a monkey wrench in the situation for sure." So, next one comes from Red 5 Forge. Hey, fellas, once again, I need to say thank you for your support and time you put in the knife-making community. It's very appreciated. Just in reference to some of your recent episodes, I wanted to chime in on the little subject that is education. I've been a teacher of project-based woodwork for the past 25 years, although I've been a woodworking teacher for as many, it was 7 years ago that I signed up for a class with a very talented Mr. Owen Bush to further my professional set. Whilst I was there, he went on and hooked me into this wonderful craft of bladesmithing, and more so spiraling down the rabbit hole of pattern welding. We now offer bladesmithing in our curriculum, where I teach children old enough to properly swing a hammer. And he basically says the true value that someone gains from having to go at something new, challenging themselves and making something that's beautiful and practical and most important, not to be marked or graded. I urge anyone with the time, willing, and equipment to open your shop doors where it's possible to maybe someone will strike a chord. But be careful. So look, you never know. We were talking about education, and you know, Mareko and I were talking about, you know, it's important to go to schools, reputable schools. I have Pat Quinn on once a month, and we talk about Center for Middle Arts and the importance of education and, you know, properly learning how to do this stuff. And what Red 5 Forge basically says is you never know when something might strike a chord and you might pursue education. Akiva Miola says, hey all, I just want to let you know that Mareko saying, put it in a food saver for all I fucking care, had me laughing so hard I almost fried the rough grinds on my last order. Thanks for the laughs, Akiva. So we were talking about how do you prevent your carbon steel knives from getting rusty, and Mareko gave a few things. He said, put in a food saver for all I care. Just to let you know, once again, STP Custom Collections wanted everyone to know that the 5th annual Louisiana Custom Knife Show at the will be September 14th through 15th in Gonzales, Louisiana. Go to lacustomknives.net. And Adele Knives says, just binge watch 4 episodes of Baby Reindeer, and I can tell you this, it's got nothing to do with Rudolph. That was one of Craig's recommendations. Yeah. That's fine. We can go to something.
That's fine.
Else.
Let's do some questions.
Go ahead.
Okay. All right. So if you've got questions for us, we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. DM us those questions and we'll add them to the list. And Bayard Knives has done exactly that, saying, hey gents, if you only had 7 hours a week total to work on knives, would you rather spend 1 hour each day or 7 hours in one day? As always, forever grateful for the laughs, insight, and encouragement.
That's a good one.
It's a good one. Can I start with that?
Please.
Can I start? Without a doubt, 7 hours in one day. Because it's so easy to just, if you give yourself an hour a day, it's so easy to waste that first half an hour at least. Just thinking, what am I going to be doing? What do I need to set up and setting things up and all the rest of it? You just think, no, 7 hours. You're in that headspace and you can just crack on and you can do far more than you think you would. But yeah, an hour a day, it's real, real hard. It's a hard slog to get yourself going. Mm. You don't find that momentum, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think, Mareko?
Yeah, I would agree. I've talked about this in the past about like self-motivation and drive and stuff like that. And I really struggle with it. And doing that over and over again for just 1 hour a day across 7 days sounds agonizing, but it's probably good practice. But anyways, I would say, yeah, I would agree. 7 hours all in one block, because once I get that momentum going, I gotta keep going until I just can't go anymore, or it's time to call it quits or whatever. But yeah, I struggle so hard with just like getting that, just the action initiation to get things going. That
like, why
I it's just fucking how I work. It's just how I am. Well, I mean, I'm not you, Jeff. Sorry
no,
to say.
You're not me. But it,
is that
at the
okay
same
with
time,
you that I'm not like you?
Yes. Well, it's fine. Of course. If you were like me, then this would be a very boring podcast.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, I just think like, I think anybody can do whatever they want. It's just a question of the desire. You know,
I wouldn't so much say desire. I think it's practicality as well. If you've got an hour a day, you know, there's certain things that you'd need to do at the beginning of every sort of session and at the end of every session as well, such as the tidying up and turning things on, all the rest of it. And all that time can sort of catch up. And you're like, oh, I'll quickly have a cup of coffee while that's been done. And before you know it, 20 minutes have gone and then you've got 40 minutes. Whereas, you know, so it's the practicality of it as well. Having a longer session of 7 hours, you can get so much more done.
I agree. And at first I thought 7 hours would be awesome. But I also think maybe those 1 hour, I think that you would figure out a way to be incredibly efficient in that small block of time. And I only say that because before I had my shop, and I know that I was working when my daughter was very young, I was doing a lot of stuff in the basement. And I thought to myself, I can go downstairs and I have a half an hour to glue all these things up. And I motivated myself to understand exactly what I need to get done. And then I know that this is my window of opportunity. And you just fucking do it. I wonder if the one, I mean, if you could figure out a way, obviously you're not doing a million things. If you're doing one thing, you could, you know, schedule your that hour to be as efficient as possible. It might be a nice exercise.
Yeah, but I'm sure you could. You could schedule it and be as efficient as possible. But there's still,
I know I've been in that spot. Things. I know I've been in that spot where I'm like, all right, I have like an hour. And I have to get certain things done before I can leave. I've been in that spot before.
Mm.
I'm not saying it's perfect, but I mean, you know, you do whatever it takes with what you got.
Yeah, yeah. And you can easily sort of downward spiral from that then. But just having that 1 hour a day to think, I'm not going to get much done. Is there any point?
Yeah, but why are you talking yourself out of things like that? Why would you? Why would you fucking? That's not a winning mentality.
I know it's not. I completely know it's not. But I know that that's how my brain works.
You're saying you know, but that doesn't mean it's true. You're saying it right now to me, and then you're being very, frankly, you're being very candid, and I appreciate your honest sincerity. But if you're just like, I have to get this done in an hour, you're going to get it done.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you fall in the water and you can't swim, you're going to say, I can't swim, so that means I'm going to drown?
No, not at all. I think over the, 600 hours we've been doing this show, we've worked out that you have a different mentality to me.
that's a choice.
I wouldn't say work, but different priorities, should we say. I could easily talk myself out of not doing 1 hour. Because I've got a million other things to do. Whereas I know if I've got 7 hours, that's it. I can turn off those other things I need to do because this is my 7 hours of focus.
I'm going to pose something to the both of you. Imagine, because I'm older than the both of you. I'm older than the both of you. And
do it.
What if you knew you don't have a lot more time left? Maybe the clock's... I mean, everyone's clock's running out. You got only day, you know, I'm not saying I have clock. I mean, my clock is, you know, hopefully going to go for a long time. But at the same time, it's like, you're not getting any younger. And it's like, what are we doing? And I want to be as efficient as possible, and I want to be as effective as possible. I just had a, I got a message that one of my customers just passed away. Good customer, good guy, you know, lived into his 70s, was super supportive of me. He didn't buy it. He bought, you know, he just helped when he could. He bought like a shirt here, a hat here, this, that, the other thing. Sent me nice kind of, you know, things. He was just like into it. And I found out, you know, he just died. And it was like, it was very sad. And I was thinking about it. And look, I'm 50. I mean, it's not, how much longer? I mean, what do I got? 40 more years? I don't think so. So I got to either figure out a way to make be as efficient as possible. Or, I mean, it's like, what the fuck am I doing?
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you, are you like that in all aspects of your life?
Of course. I mean, here's a good
example. Have you always been like that in all aspects of your life?
I'll be very frank. I have situations where I've seen people very close to me fritter their life away and thinking that at the end everything's going to work out and everything's going to be happily ever after in the end. And it's very, very far from that. And it's like, I can't be put in that position where I have to hope somebody plucks me out of obscurity and then tucks me in at the end and it's happily ever after. I'm responsible for everything. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the best care of myself as possible. When I was 30, my cholesterol came back a little high, and I was just like, I'm not going to be told when I'm 50 that I have to change my lifestyle. So I started dealing with like being a little bit healthier early because I'm like, the clock is running out. I don't know how long I got, but I'm going to make the best of it. And it's been made me more efficient in regards to being a parent and being a business owner, being a husband. My kid has to get up at fucking 4:30 every morning now because she's got a job at a goddamn bakery. And she's got a great attitude about it. And I wake up with her and I make her breakfast. I tell her a few jokes. I make her some coffee. I get her ready to go. I love it because I'm spending quality time with her and I'm not complaining about it because I'm like, how much time do I have? I only got a summer with her. So I'm going to do whatever it takes. I hear people, I'm not saying you guys, but I hear people making I don't give a fuck. You live your lives. But I hear a lot of people making excuses. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, make an excuse, but don't tell me you can't change. It's, you know, times, you don't want the fucking clock to run out, dude. And then what?
I completely agree with that line. But my mentality then would be, okay, I can have an hour in the shop or 7 hours in one day. Then in the back of my mind, I hear, oh, you're getting on now. You're getting old. Make this time count.
So that's 7 hours.
I'm like, fuck that, man. Let's take the kids out to the beach for the day, you know?
That's the best. So if that's 7 hours, how much of that 7 hours are you fumfering around?
if it is a case of, you know, there's work to be done, I'd always choose the 7 hours in one day if the option was there. There's no doubt.
What do you think, Barreco?
I
don't know. Yeah, anything to add?
No, I don't know. I think it's maybe it's unfortunate, but fortunate that you've had good and bad role models to help get you into that place. And not everybody's had those examples and those experiences. And intellectually speaking, you can read all the self-help books in the world and it all can make sense, but then putting all of that information or even just a few of those tips into action can be very difficult. And everybody comes from their own backgrounds and own experiences, which I know, you know, and I just say that because I know you don't think that, you know, everybody's just had these beautiful, perfect lives. And I think part of it is just like people are at their own place working through not only their business and life shit, but just like their mental shit as well. And trying to, for me personally, I'm trying to, you know, integrate all of those all at the same time. And it's been a lot of work over the last couple of years. I'm getting better at it, but it's not a snap of the fingers and it's not going to happen overnight.
Of course, nothing is. But at the same time, when I'm lying back and thinking about, I don't want any regrets. And I don't want to be like, I really fucking threw out my 30s. I'm not going to think that way. You know, I got to haul ass. And I'm going to haul ass from 4:30 in the morning. I mean, I'm going to haul ass, go to the Blade Show. I have to, you know what time I got to fucking do? I did, this is my fault. I'm not, this is my fault. I got a, Lawrence Lake's my guy. He got me a flight out of New York at 6 a.m. And that means I got to leave Peekskill at like 2:30. And then I don't get home until like, it's going to be 24 hours. And I'm just like, that's what I'm going to do. No problem. I'm going to make it done. I'm going to get it done.
That's a weekly occurrence for me. Come on. I
know. See, you know what? Come that on. Is a weekly occurrence for you. You're a bad motherfucker out there in the streets. Out in these streets. All right,
I think, just as a final point on that, I think we've all got different sort of, I wouldn't say goals. We all got different motivations to do things. And I think, yeah, there's no right way. There's no wrong way. I think whatever makes... And I know Jeff is going to balk at this. He's going to say, it's not about being happy. It's not. It is about being
what
happy.
Do you think it is about being happy?
Think
this is a gulag? You think this is all gulag talk?
I wouldn't want on my gravestone, here lies Craig. He worked 80 hours a week. I'd want, here lies Craig. He did fuck all. He was really happy and relaxed.
No, you need a little gulag. You need a little gulag in your life. There you go. There's your quote. There's the title. You need a little gulag in your life.
A little gulag. Okay.
But I mean, you know what the funny thing is I get satisfaction from like putting my head down and knowing that I didn't fump around and I got all the things I got done. Even on the weekends, I don't get to just do nothing. It's crazy. It's madness. It's all madness. But at the same time, I feel like I'm squeezing everything out of life. And I just don't want there to be, and it all kind of dovetails back to this idea of experience is underrated. I think that there's a lot of people who want to get to the destination without doing the journey. And I'm all about the journey. And I don't need to get to the destination. The destination will come when it comes. But I feel as though that's part of the experience is like just cranking away and figuring out what works, what doesn't work. Obviously, people are different. Obviously, people have their own struggles, and I couldn't possibly just belittle. I'd like to belittle them, but I'm not going to belittle them. I'd like to, but I'm not. But at the same time, it's just like, you know, I get people asking me these questions, and they're just like, you know, they don't want gulag time. They don't want gulag time. And sometimes it's gulag time.
There we go. A little gulag. Okay, who's going to take the next one?
I'll take one. Actually, that's been down.
What's your favorite type of grind? There we go. That's what we want.
I'll take one that's been sitting on the question list a little further down for a little while. This comes from Bremer Built Knives. He says, hey, boys, can we talk a bit about decarb, how it occurs, and if there is any fixing it? I've had a couple blades that get sort of a cloudy look to them when I'm hand sanding. I've heard that that can be decarb. Is the blade garbage at that point? I usually hand forge my blades as close to shape as I can, then do a bit of profiling, drilling, and filing, and all the normalizing cycles, etc., then into the oven for quench. Then grinding my bevels, post-heat treat. Should I pre-grind the bevels? Let me know what you think. Think, please. I tried not to write the Magna Carta, but too fucking bad you did. Anyways.
Yeah.
No, it's all right. No, it's a good question. Decarb is definitely an issue that is, or a thing, not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily have to be an issue, but something that should be taken in consideration, especially if you're forging blades. And honestly, even if you're not forging blades, in stock removal blades, it is also a potential issue. But do you guys have anything?
Go ahead, Craig.
No, nothing really to add. I mean, I can only say the way that I've always done it, and that I'd always grind bevels after heat treat. I know a lot of people will, you know, take some off beforehand, but I just find it just makes the heat treating process just that much easier, I think. And it's a different feel when you're grinding as well, if it's heat treated, I think, to something that's soft. And it's just what I've always done. So, I couldn't really give an opposing opinion to that.
The times I get decarb that I'm like, it's too late and I got to go back and resand it, it's because I've either, if I've ground a knife and then heat treated it, I went too close to the final thickness. And then I didn't give myself enough room to remove it. The times that I've done stock removal, gotten decarb, is when I used to heat treat 440C, but the thickness of the steel was very, very thick. It was way thicker than it should have been. Like it was 1/8 to 3/16. And then when I ground in, it just wasn't I wasn't getting, the quench wasn't going, it wasn't converting the austenite over to martensite fast enough or completely. Now the times I get, I just, if I'm plate quenching, I'm doing full thickness and I'm usually doing 3/3.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
30 seconds or a 16th or maybe an eighth. Mm-hmm. And then I don't worry about the decarb because I'm gonna get rid of it anyway. And then if I'm doing, like I just did some Baker Forge steel, I always know that I need to make sure that I have a lot of room to grind back because I'm gonna have to get past the decarb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
go ahead.
That's important to keep in mind. Yeah. So the first part of the question is, how does decarb occur? So anytime your steel, whether it's carbon steel or stainless, is exposed to oxygen at temperatures higher than critical, you're going to start, the carbon is moving around through that iron matrix and it actually off gases and it's making its way out of the steel. That's when the decarb and the forge scale and stuff is occurring. And the oxygen is also attacking the iron as well within the material, which is also what lends to the forge scale. And in general, especially at least for carbon steel knives, critical is around 1350, 1375-ish. But that can vary from steel to steel. Just like Jeff was saying, you kind of have to plan whether you're doing stock removal or forging. If you're not wanting to have that decarb in the blade intentionally in your finished product, you have to plan ahead for further grinding to get through that decarb. Now, in my experience, the decarb can vary quite a bit, but generally it's like maybe 20 thousandths kind of on the thicker side. On either side or kind of around any part of the blade that has been exposed to those high temperatures, again, above critical. And the higher you go, honestly, above critical, and most forging temperatures are way above critical, you're gonna experience more of that. And that's where people are like really concerned. They're gonna burn out all the carbon out of their steel through either making Damascus or forging blades and blah, blah, blah. Or even just generally heat treating. And the carbon doesn't move that fast, but you don't also want to be spinning all fucking day. You know, you want to get it done. And it sounds like he's doing mono steel blades, or they're doing mono steel blades. And typically, if there is some decarb, it's not really an issue unless you're going to be etching the blade for some reason. Otherwise, that decarb material typically presents the same as the hardened material. It can maybe have a little bit of a different look in monosteel, but I've noticed that there's more of a different look with monosteel blades in the hand sanding, which he's mentioning here is in his hand sanding. He's seen like some of these cloudy areas. What I've experienced before in the past and what I've seen in the past is blades that haven't properly been hardened or fully completely transformed from austenite to martensite, which means just like the blade isn't being quenched fast enough. And there are these small areas around the blade that are not martensite. They didn't get down kind of below what's referred to as a perlite nose. And if you want to know more about that, you can go to Dr. Laren Thomas's site, knifesteelnerds.com, or get his book, Knife Engineering, and you can kind of get some more information around that heat treating information around perlite nose and all that and quenching. But when that doesn't happen in the material, it doesn't transform to martensite. And I even honestly have blades from when I was first starting out. I was doing heat treating, or it was probably a couple of years in, and I did have an even heat, but I thought I was kind of shortcutting things by doing a lot of as much work as possible out of the forge, but then doing the final hardening out of the kiln. And I've just, what I was experiencing was these weird transformation, like differences in the steel. And it was very clear when I got up or near the bolster transition of the integral bolster, because it's a larger a massive material, it also holds heat longer. And it's a larger thermal mass versus the thin cross section of the blade. And so that wasn't cooling down fast enough. And I also probably wasn't getting a good soak on it at the right temperature by heat treating out of the forge. It doesn't necessarily affect the performance of the blade, but because I was working with carbon steel Damascus, it was kind of messing with the finishing qualities of getting the blade etched and all that kind of stuff. And so that's when I started going all heat treat. Now, when I do forge, I forge to what I refer to as heat treating dimension. A lot of people will say forge to finish. Jason Knight, Neil Kamimura, you know, people say forge to finish. And you can forge really close to finish. Like, it's amazing how close you can get. But there are potentially some drawbacks when forging that close, and some of that is the decarb that you just will not get below. Again, in mono steel, that's less of a concern, but in carbon steel or in Damascus, that can become more of a concern, because that decarb, because you have to etch the blade to reveal that pattern, that decarb is going to show up, and it is not going to look right, and it's going to look like you fucked up the blade. So I forge to a heat treating dimension. But that's keeping in mind, like Jeff was saying, kind of planning ahead that you have to get below that decarb layer. And so at that kind of quote-unquote heat treat dimension after my forging, that's when I'll do my normalizing cycles. I'll do all the like the prep for the final hardening in that form. And if I've forged close to that heat treating dimension, then I might even harden at that dimension. But there are some patterns that when I'm forging, I don't want to encourage or introduce any unwanted distortion. So I'll only forge the profile so that the pattern follows the profile of the knife nicely, but not necessarily to the heat treating dimension. And that means before I do the final hardening, so that I get good hardening quality and performance quality out of the blade in the final heat treat and final hardening, I do some pre-grinding. But I'm also, again, keeping in mind, like we've said, you got to still leave a bit of room so you can get through that. And so again, kind of factoring in about that 20,000ths in all dimensions along the spine, along the faces, along the edge, around the bolster, all that kind of stuff, so that you can get down below that to what is going to be your finished product, is important to kind of keep in track. I don't know if I answered the question or not, but
I think you did.
I think that's probably good.
I think you did. I think you did. Yes.
We ain't gonna get much better than that.
No. All good. Right. Let's tell everybody about Combat Abrasives.
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KnifeTalk15. Do it now.
Okay, back to questions. There's one here from Will Hansen. He said, quick question, maybe for Craig.
Oh, you only ask the questions that are for you, huh?
Well, just kidding. Why not?
Just joking.
When forging, do you... He says, what handler material and epoxy holds up in a dishwasher? He says, a long time ago, he mentioned a steak knife that he left in the dishwasher to see how it would take multiple washes. Yes. So there was a period when I was doing a lot of steak knives for restaurants, lots of them. And everybody wants something slightly different, obviously. So the first ones that I did, I was using a lot of sort of stabilized woods. Actually, the very first ones that I remember, it was Purple Heart. And it was really hard to stabilize it because it was quite hard anyway. But yeah, I just made sure I really put that time in to make sure everything was stabilized as good as it could be. Just because, you know, it's one thing using a knife at home. It's another thing in a restaurant where it's been used probably multiple times a day. It probably isn't being looked after the best way. And you know, it's just one of many knives. It's nothing special as it would be if it was yours in the house. So if it's woods, make sure they're stabilized as well as they can be. Even if it's a really dense hardwood. I mean, I've done some with like really dense walnut as well. It's always worth going through that process of stabilizing, even if you think you don't need to, just to make sure. Because I believe it gives that extra bit of sort of resistance to sort of steam and just moisture anyway. Even if it is a really hard wood, it's worth doing that. But I did a lot of plastics as well. So I think plastics are great. Obviously, it's completely water resistant. Everything would have a liner. So I'd also make sure I'd have a very, very thin G10 liner. And then I think make sure you're using some sort of mechanical fitting. So I'd be using Corby bolts. Just again, you know, if it were a case of the epoxy failing, you've got that mechanical thing anyway. I did a fair bit of sort of testing with epoxies. This was probably 4 years ago now. And I spoke to a lot of manufacturers as well regarding epoxies. What causes them to break down, the best way to sort of store them, look after them, that kind of thing. And it turns out that it's a massive thing, actually, the way you store your epoxies. What they don't like is fluctuating temperatures. So if you've got, a big old bottle of, West Systems epoxy, if you have it for maybe multiple seasons, try and store it in a way where the temperature doesn't waver too much. So I built like a little, basically like a temperature controlled sort of storage cupboard, which was an old fridge. So everything is always set at, and I believe it's around about 20 degrees C. No matter what time of year, it's always set at that. The viscosity is always really nice at that sort of temperature as well. So it pours nicely. It's not too thick, not too thin. And I just think that's all you can do really. Make sure you're using great materials that, as I say, if it's wood that you do stabilize it, make sure you're using good epoxy that has been well cared for. But I've always used the West System stuff. I've tried other stuff. I couldn't really say whether it stuck, it did the adhesion any better, but I just like the viscosity of the West System stuff, so that I've always used. I'd know when I do my mix well, because it's something I've always used. So the West System stuff, never really had any issues with it. So all of the restaurant orders that I've got, I always keep a few back myself anyway. And they're always just thrown in the dishwasher. I use them at home anyway, so they're always just thrown in the dishwasher anyway. And they've all held up really well actually. The one thing that I would say is that one of the restaurants that I did an order for, and I certainly haven't had any complaints from them, but just from my own sort of use, and it was one of the first ones that I did, it had a pin in there, which was like they used EDM wire cutter, so we had the logo in the pin, the logo of the restaurant, which meant that one, that particular one, didn't have a mechanical fitting on the front, only on the back. And the actual fitting of the scale is fine. Nothing's happened there that hasn't given way in any way. But the resin that they've used inside of the pin, that has sort of washed out a bit. So you can actually feel the pin now with your finger.
Interesting.
So the actual resin that they flood the, if you'd imagine a pipe, and they put the logo in there, then they flood that with a resin. That resin that they've used is sort of indented slightly now. It makes no difference to the actual structure of the knife at all. I see that, and that does bug me. And I always think, They probably haven't even noticed in the restaurant, but I always think, ah. But that, I think that's the one thing that I couldn't control. I outsourced those pins, and, you know, so I don't know what resins they were using in there. But yeah, apart from that, I think, I mean, if you look at the steak knives that I was doing for restaurants, the construction was very, very simple, and that was intentional. Because they need to stand up to a hell of a lot.
If they wanted you to do it again, how would you make changes to prevent that? You're using your experience to do it again. What would you do differently?
I would probably put a fail safe of another Corby bolt. So if you imagine a scale down the blade end of the scale, this is where it had this. The custom pin, it's like a custom mosaic pin, but it was custom with their logo, was there. And the other end, sort of the butt of the knife, that one had the Corby bolt in. So I'd probably make the design to have a Corby bolt up top as well, and maybe have that decorative pin in the middle, just to give me that peace of mind, right, that there's the mechanical fit in both sides. I said it hasn't given way in any way at all. The only thing it's purely cosmetic, the way that
it wears
it
away a little bit.
Degraded slightly. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, if I was doing custom pins again, I think if you put in a custom order, I don't think there'd be any problem with speaking to the people making it and asking them, you know, what resin's using, and say, maybe could you use, you know, this certain resin? I don't think that would be an issue.
Bro, I've been getting messages from fucking custom pin people. I don't think I'm going to get on customer service in any of them motherfuckers. Some of these pin people are these pin guys, I wouldn't trust them to, you know, water my plants.
I've used two different businesses to do custom pins, and the service between the two is markedly different.
Oh, wow.
So I did one where we actually put the Michelin star. So when you awarded a star, we actually put those pins in these knives as well for certain chefs if they had a star. And they turned out great, really great. And it was red resin that they were flooded with, and they look really great. And they've really held up. So I've made myself a couple that I keep in the house here. They've held up really well, but it's just the ones that I used a black resin with a different maker.
From Wazar Zabard.
Yeah, it was abroad. Yeah, yeah. And I think they may be cheaped out on the resins that we're using. Yeah,
I love the fact that knife makers have like decided to go with epoxy people who are they make stuff for marine grade epoxy,
marine stuff mainly. Yeah, yeah. So the West System stuff is. Yeah,
I love that. I love that. And it's so funny because I remember watching Jason Knight's video. And he goes, they put it on boats. It's for boats. I mean, it's just like, if that's not good enough for you, it's not good enough for anybody. I mean, they put it on boats. It's to keep boats from sinking. You know, yeah. I always love that. I love the knife. You know, Aaron Wilburn said the same thing. It's like, this is for keeping boats up. I mean, that's about as good as it gets.
Yeah. We haven't had for a number of years now, but there was a certain time, and I think I was doing lots of testing with epoxy, so maybe that's why. But lots of epoxy manufacturers sent me stuff. And what I would say is, I mean, most of it is sort of solvent-based anyway, but some of the packaging that some of it came in, you know, they'd repackage it as, you know, knife-making epoxy, right. You know. And the bottles that they put it in then wouldn't sort of be airtight. They'd be like almost like sauce bottles, you know, that you could squeeze them.
Hot sauce bottles? Kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, those. No. I mean, the plastic, like ketchup bottles. You know, where you sort of squeeze them that way. And I'm thinking, well, the air's getting into them, and this, you know, because they're solvent based, they need to be sealed because you need to keep those solvent gases in. So yeah, I think they were a bit of a problem. But West System stuff I found has always been great. But yeah, everybody just make sure you store it well, because it does go off. And yeah, that those fluctuations in temperatures will seriously degrade how well the epoxies work.
I had Aaron Goff on Full Blast every so often, and I talked to him.
Yes,
and I used to listen to what he says, and he says the epoxy, if you're using Corby bolts, the epoxy is just a sealer. It's just going to make sure that nothing gets in there. And now his situation is so tight, he doesn't use any epoxy at all.
None at all.
Wow. He's all Corby's and fit. And he's just like, he hasn't, and we want to talk about a guy who tests. Ain't nobody tests like Aaron Goff. I mean, he's on the Resolute Mark III for the past 15 years. I mean, you know how long it takes to get to the next mark? I mean, you are talking like a millennium. I mean, you're talking like 10 years to get to the next mark. So
it's like a Honda Civic. They keep the same model for like years.
I busted his balls. I'm like, when are we going to get to the Mark IV? I mean, I only have so much time in my life. He's like, it's going to take a long time. So, but yeah, he doesn't use any epoxy at all anymore. I believe. You'd have to listen to him.
Yeah. Nice.
There you go.
Okay, Fernandez Forge. Who's going
to
take that one?
Okay, this comes from Fernandez Forge. Once again, guys, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. You can DM us your questions or everything else. He says, question time. If you were blessed by the knife-making gods and could knock out one aspect of knife-making with the snap of a finger, what would it be? I thought of Insta Bevels and Instant Mirror, but for me, it would be drilling holes, 100%. Insta Mascus would save time, but the forging is the fun part, in my opinion. So you guys, you have the gift of erasing one of the things out of the process of knife making. What would it be?
Okay, this next spot is brought to you by Indasa Rhinowet, because if you're like me, you hate hand sanding. If I could get rid of hand sanding and get good finishes fast, which I know some people have perfected, they can do it really well. To me, that's the bit that I hate doing. But it is a bit easier with Indasa Rhinowet. If you struggle with hand sanding like I do, give Rhinowet a try. It does make things a lot easier. You can get that from TexasFarrierSupply.com, where they sell everything you could possibly need as a knife maker or a farrier. Or if you move metal in any way, take a look at TexasFarrierSupply.com and use KnifeTalk10 to get 10% off your full order, including Rhinowet, so make sure you do it. For me, it is definitely hand sanding. And I'm surprised, drilling, he said he hates, I love drilling.
Hey, baby.
Obviously, you got three kids.
That was a race to the finish line. You got three kids. That was a race. Good job, Mareko.
I do enjoy drilling, and I do enjoy the sort of profiling and drilling, you know, the setup before heat treat, you know? I love that point. To me, it's probably one of my favorite bits. So yeah, it's surprising, you know, how people find different bits. I wouldn't say more difficult, but more enjoyable than others. Mareko, what about you? What's that one bit you just like? Oh man.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people would say the hand sanding, but most of my work is carbon steel, which is pretty forgiving when it comes to hand sanding. Until you get into some of the high alloy mono steels like A2, W2. They're just so insanely wear resistant. It's a pain. But I do those far and few between, and I can understand how the hand sanding would be your move, because you're doing all stainless, and stainless is also not fun necessarily to hand finish. But my big bottleneck is, it would definitely be my handle sculpting. It's just like I'm doing these like heavily contoured handles, or when I'm doing the faceted Western handles, or any other kind of faceted, whatever combination of contours and facets, it's really time consuming, and it's fun, and it helps to, I've been doing some experimenting lately that helps to break down, or kind of beat the monotony, I guess, of what I've been doing over the years. But at the same time, it is definitely my bottleneck in my process. And also because of, I struggle with the idea, like some of the handle materials I'm working with, especially if a customer has sent it, I feel very anxious about making a mistake and ruining the handle material, mainly because I've 100% done that in the past, multiple times. And, that really slows me down too, just trying to like beat the anxiety. Yeah, so my choice would be to get rid of the handle sculpting, or, you know, that was easy. That was easy. Push the button, handle's done. But maybe I need to get, what if I invested in like a CNC router? What do you think about that for like what is it? They have some that are like, that are almost work like lathes in a way.
I'm gonna paint the picture.
Okay.
You've figured it out. You have your giant machine.
Yep.
It's ready to go. You've tested it.
Okay.
You've done it. You put that knife in the vise and it's ready to go. You're pressing the buttons. You've done it a million times. You put the special handle material on and the fucking bit breaks as soon as it touches the handle and destroys the whole fucking thing. Are you prepared for that?
I guess it's a risk either way.
I mean, that's what it's like. I mean, you want to talk to craziness, talk to Aaron Goff, how many knives he's destroyed.
Well, he's working with much more, much tougher material, right? Like G10 and other synthetics, where I'm doing most of my work with natural materials.
Doesn't matter. I mean, you don't have to count the hours on your bits. You have to count the work. You know, what happens when it makes a transition between the wood and the bolster of the steel?
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, I'd be far more afraid that, like, I didn't, you know, all of a sudden the bit got too worn and it fucking cracks off. And next thing you know, it's just like, donezo.
Yeah.
I trust you over a machine, if that makes you feel better.
Sure. It's just, you know.
Yeah, I was about to say that. I think your work, Mareko, is people want your work the way it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right.
You know? You want the Mareko 5000, though. We want the handleless the Mareko 5000. Yeah. We don't want gulag time anymore. We want the Mareko 5000.
No. That would probably be for more if I was trying to do a little bit more production work. Stuff that, and it wouldn't even take it all the way there. It'd probably be like 80% or 90% of the way there, but you still have to finish it on them by hand kind of situation. But yeah. It's just, you know, some of these handles are like anywhere from like 2 for a straightforward contoured handle to like 6 hours of sculpting work, and you're not scaling up unless you're doing something seriously different, and that's where that magical button comes in.
That's a lot.
I know,
it's a lot of time,
trust me.
What about you, Jeff? What's the one thing you wish you could just
I don't like waiting for the all the heat treatment and the tempering. Like that is like I have to plan everything around it. And that annoys me. And I'm not crazy about grinding, but I can live with it. I'm not crazy about hand sanding, but I can live with it. All that stuff.
So you've got certain models, haven't you, that you do? Like, 5, 6, 7, or 8 models that you do. So do you do like, like you heat treat like a bunch of them so that they're there then when you need them? Or are you heat treating like what you need for that week?
It depends. I mean, when we get stuff in, I try to prepare it and we try to heat treat, you know, we'll do a couple days of heat treating and it depends. Like today, I won't do a lot of heat treating because I know that we're going to podcast and I know that I don't want to worry about whether or not I have enough time. I mean, that's the thing is every day I have to look at where I'm at in every different stage. Like I actually did some heat treatment this morning, but I knew that I was only going to heat treat till lunch. Because I know I can get my second temper in before I leave tonight. But if I'm doing like, I love to do 16 knives in a day, but I know that I only have a certain amount of room and space and time. So I have to organize myself in terms of that. Now, in regards to what we're doing, like today, I was looking at the website and seeing what we had. And I thought, let's work on some things that we don't have as much of. So that's how I work. But we try to heat treat often. And before I need it, so I don't want to be heat treating when I need something because you know it's a fucking day. I mean, the heat treated and the temper twice and all this bullshit. So that's the thing I don't like the most is the waiting around. But you know, look, what can you do? I want the Mareko button. I'm ready. I don't want gulag. Trust me, guys.
There's an attachment arm for
gulag
that.
Gulag time isn't the greatest time. It's just part of life.
I'm laughing along. I haven't got a clue what gulag is.
A gulag is like a Russian prison. It's like a Russian prison colony.
Really? Ah, right.
You get sent to the gulag. My dad, when I was a kid, he's like, if you don't behave, you're going to get sent to the gulag. It's like a Russian. It's like a Russian prison camp.
Some Cold War shit. Wow.
Yeah, the gulag. You don't like that's why you got to make it. That's the gulag time. All right. You guys want to go to our new game? We don't have much time left. Would you rather?
Let's do it. Okay, let's do it. Well, first of all, tell everybody what your grinder.
Oh my God, are you kidding me? The Broadbeck Ironworks 2x72 grinder. This thing is sick. And they got a deal right now. If you go to broadbeckironworks.com, between now and June 17th, they have a package special for Blade Show. The max package, you get a free contact wheel, large contact wheel. The premium package gets you the rotary attachment. The mega package gets you the rotary waterfall and the mister. All that special. They got a special price on the packages. All their attachments are 15% off. And then Knife Talk 10 will resume June 18th. But Broadbeck Ironworks got a special Blade Show situation going on, and you don't want to miss out because they have great products. And I mean, 15% off their attachments, that's good enough for me. But I love my Broadbeck, and you will too. So go to broadbeckironworks.com. Okay?
That sounds good.
Guys, listen, somebody proposed that we do a Would You Rather, and boy, did our listeners, we did a good job last week. Craig, you're back, so we got for you. So, guys, if you want to send us a message, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and you can send your Would You Rather. And don't be like Brigham Kendall, who sent one that's, I don't even know if I can read it, because it's so putrid.
Lascivious.
Putrid.
Never mind. We'll see. We'll see. I'll read it at the end, then. Mr. Putrid. Don't do putrid. Do nice. Just kidding. Brigham's fine by me. The first one comes from... You need a knife company. Would you rather cut your fingertips while sharpening or kiss a 60-grit belt with your knuckles? Both accidentally happened, obviously. So would you rather cut your fingertips while sharpening or bump into that 60-grit belt with your knuckles?
I've done both of those.
Done both of those.
Multiple times, yeah. Yeah. I think... I'd least like to then. Okay, let's do it that way. I'd least like to cut my finger while sharpening. That's like a paper cut, yeah. That, you know? Whereas, you know, the bump bit, it's just like a sting. It happens. You get your knuckles, it stings, it happens, and then it's sort of done with. But that, you know, that fingertip and the paper cuts. No, I'm not into that.
What do you think, Mareko?
I would rather hit my knuckles on the yeah. belt, which I actually did last year, and I had to go get stitches for it. But I would still rather do that than cut up my fingertips while sharpening.
For me, I've accidentally bumped into a 36-grit fresh belt. Mm-hmm. It takes off a lot of real estate. Like, yeah. It's a fucking. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not like a. It's like a cut. My father-in-law is a cardiologist, and he showed me how to bandage your shit up. So you don't need stitches. And I got a system in place that I like. And like, if I got a thin cut, I'm wrapping that shit up. And by the end of the night or by the next day, I think we're going to be okay. But you bump your fucking knuckles into that 36 grit belt. All of a sudden you got like the size of a raspberry on that knuckle. You can't really, you can't really bandage it up nice. There's nothing, there's no flaps. It's all fucking road rash. It's terrible. I'll take the fucking cut. With the knife.
Okay.
It's too much real estate, and then you bend your knuckles, and then all of a sudden, then what?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then that awful scab doesn't go nice because you're picking at it because you're a mental patient. Next thing you know, you have like infotigo on your knuckle because you picked up the goddamn scabs. Fuck that shit. Devin Lee says, would you rather have to sell every knife through an in-person storefront or make one style of knife the same color, shape, and steel for the rest of your career? So you got to be either, you sell every mm-hmm. single knife in person in a storefront or make one knife, mm-hmm. same color, same shape, same steel for the rest of your career.
Would I'm
you
ready.
Rather? Go ahead. Give it.
I'm going storefront for sure. Because, and
Hollywood.
I got to lend my, our guy, Quentin Middleton, some props for this concept because he is the master of the pop-up. And so he'll build up a bunch of inventory and then boom, pop up somewhere. And I fucking love that. So I would rather do that. And it doesn't have to be every day. They should have stipulated that in the rules. But so you just, yeah, every couple months, pop up, sell your shit. Done. That's just making the same thing over and over again. sounds psychotic. I would be like Aaron, so like unhappy.
It's like Aaron Goff time.
For me, it would
gulag time. He's the epitome of gulag time.
I'd have to be a crazy
time.
Person to do that. My brain is not capable of that.
I think there's benefits to both, because I think if you're meeting people and you're speaking to customers every day and you're learning what they want, that kind of thing, you can sort of grow as a maker that way. But there's also that other way of, you just mentioned Aaron Goff doing those same models over and over again and just like absolutely perfecting every tiny, tiny detail. And I think I'd prefer that, not having to speak to anybody. But just having to, yeah.
You want gulag time.
I want gulag time. Yeah, yeah. And just having that thing where you can just make something as perfect as you can. And only when you do, like a Honda Civic, you move on to the next version of it, you know?
Yeah. Let me tell you what it's like going to like a farmer's market. My dad used to drag my ass to help him do these farmer's markets. It was awful. I used to beg him not to take me. I used to beg him. I set up and we'd have to answer questions and it was the same people and they didn't care. And it was like, and then I actually was in a bakery for a while and I was helping do, I would go to a store with some samples and I would, you know, hand out samples. It's sometimes these people, they get on your last nerve, telling you the thought of, preparing yourself and going to a store and dealing with these people all the time, every time. And, oh, well, I only use this kind of metal. Oh, what kind of metal you use? Oh, I only use it. And they're trying to relate and they're trying to talk. Give me gulag time. Give me gulag time. I cannot. I don't know if I could do, if I had to go and sell in the store all the time, I would lose my mind. I would lose my mind saying the same thing over and over again. And then you find yourself saying the same thing over again and you're using the same pattern of speech and you're saying the same goddamn thing over and over again. Give me gulag time. I'll take it.
Okay.
All right. There we go. You know what? I like the fact that we're all having different answers. Next one comes from our friend. Yeah. Oh, this is a good one. This is from Plumley Knives, guys. Plumley Knives. He says, would you rather only be able to take classes for the rest of your life or teach classes for the rest of your life?
Take
Plumley
classes.
Knives.
Easy.
You take classes, yeah. Definitely, yes.
Take classes is right. That's the right answer. Yeah, yeah. Who the fuck wants to teach a class all the time? I mean, Jesus Christ. You're going to talk about gulag time. We're going to say the same thing.
I've got a friend who works in a school, and he's like, like a college, and he does like carpentry. So every year he does the same thing.
Same
every
projects.
Time,
oh
you know? And I'm just like, oh man, it would kill me. And, you know, it's obviously quite basic stuff as well, because, you know, from the first year onwards, they're learning, you know, really basic stuff. I think that would just be the most soul destroying thing ever. But hey, 14 weeks holiday a year. So, you can't really complain.
Yeah, seriously. Teachers, I mean, they have an awesome job. But I mean, at the same time, it's just like, I mean, they get a lot of time off. I can just imagine that class. This side of the hammer puts the nail in. This side of the hammer takes the nail out. You say over and over again. What? Which side takes the nail out? This side. What about this side? Oh, no, that side doesn't do it. All right, good job, Plumley Knives. I was expecting a different answer, but fine. Here goes.
Before we go anywhere, you tell everybody about maritimeknifesupply.com. And I know if you're going to Blade next week, Lawrence is going to be there. They've got everything you need. The one-stop shop for knife makers, steel, belts, handle materials, tools, forges, kilns, and more. And they are the Canadian distributor for combat abrasives. They also sell Rhino-Wet and all that good stuff as well. maritimeknifesupply.com. Does Lawrence have like a shop there at Blade, or is he just showing up?
I think he's cruising around. Yeah, not sure.
Right, okay.
Usually he's cruising. And usually, if you can find him, he's usually handing out some sort of treats of some sort, whether it's like an extra 10% discount coupons or candy or whatever. He's a good dude.
Yeah. Nice. Never take candy from a stranger, but you all know Lawrence Lake. So he's not a stranger, okay. Never mind.
Now, I'm going to take, right, I don't know Lawrence, right? I think we've chatted, maybe on the phone, actually. I can't quite remember. But I've never met him, so I don't know what he looks like. But you guys have met him, I assume.
Great guy. He looks like Dennis Tyrell.
Well, I don't know what he looks like either. So I'm going to make a guess, right? This is how I see Lawrence. Okay. And I don't know why I see him this way, but I've got a vivid picture in my head.
Easy. Okay, go ahead. Easy.
Okay, so Lawrence is wearing khaki trousers.
I don't know what he's wearing. I thought you were to describe him. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm going from the bottom up.
That's what you always do, I guess.
That's generally how I look at the men.
You do like drilling a lot. You like to drill. Talk about gulag time. Jesus, go ahead.
He's wearing khakis. He's then wearing a light blue, like, polo shirt, T-shirt with a collar. He is massive forearms.
Is this your Tinder profile?
But balding on the
balding
top, like the way I say it, what's, you know, the American Office, what's the guy who works in accounts where he's like bald but he's got the longer hair on the side?
Fucking Kevin.
Kevin.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't know. Lawrence, that. So this is how I see Lawrence, looking a bit like Kevin, but thinner, massive arms, khaki trousers, and this. I don't know why, in my head, whenever we mention him, that's what I picture. But anyway, how wrong am
wrong?
I?
Very wrong.
He's not like that at all. He doesn't look like fucking... Not, okay. Why does he have to be bald but like stuff on the sides? That's the weird thing.
I don't know. I don't know why, but I got this. I don't know why.
He doesn't look like that. He looks like Dennis Terrell. Go look at Dennis Terrell, and then they look like brothers.
Also, Lawrence has his own maker page. It's LGL Knives. So if anybody's interested. So you know who you're looking for. You'll also probably have that Anvil
Don't
Lighthouse.
Look for Kevin from The Office.
LGL Knives on Tinder. Right. Okay.
All right. Listen, we got a couple more to get through, and then we'll get out of here. This one comes from J-Mod Knives. Would you rather have a knife go through your hand or your foot?
Ooh, interesting. I would say foot.
Yeah, I think the initial pain, I think foot would be terrible. But I think living the rest of your life, I think it's easier if it went through your foot. That makes
sense.
Yeah,
I think foot.
Yeah. But looking down and seeing a knife just like standing proud, you know, and you're nailed down to the floor with it. Oh, man.
Ugh. I once walked down to the basement of my house and I was wearing like clogs or something like that, or like flip-flops.
Clogs? It's like wooden
no,
clogs.
No, wooden clogs. not wooden clogs. Like restaurant clogs.
Leather.
Like
you never seen those?
No.
Never mind. I was wearing wooden clogs. I'm with Eric Martin.
Only Europeans then. Just
Coca-Cola clogs. I was wearing Coca-Cola. My balls were. I was just getting rid of washing my balls. They're huge from the Coca-Cola clogs. And I was walking downstairs, and I accidentally stepped on a nail, and it went through the bottom of my clog. And it went into my foot, and it pinned my foot inside the goddamn clog.
Oh, nice.
So I was pinned into the shoe.
Yeah.
Couldn't get my fucking foot out.
Going clip, clippity clop on the stairs.
Yeah, and then I started tap dancing. Yeah, it was awesome.
Man.
All right, that wasn't good. Next is Fox River Blades, our friend Fox River Blades. Would you rather start your business over again and retain all the knowledge but lose all of your equipment and tools, or start over again and retain all your equipment and tools but lose all your knowledge about knife making?
Whoa.
Okay, that's an easy one for me. Yeah. Start over again and lose the tools, keep the knowledge. Just because I just bought so many tools that I'd never need anyway. And I think, start over again. And then I'd just be a lot more careful with the tools that I did buy. I wasted a lot of money on shit that I didn't really need and that kind of thing.
Ooh, good answer.
That's a good one. Tool regrets.
Tool regrets. I've had a few.
But then again,
too few to mention. What about
we'll have that for next week. So people send in your tool regrets as well. That's a good one.
I have a boomerang tool regret. Well, I used to regret it. Now I fucking love it.
Okay.
That's it for next week.
Is that your Tormac?
You save it?
Yeah. I got a conversation. I got Tormac and I are talking next week. I mean, they might be bringing me over to Sweden. Just let you know. Now. Right. Are you kidding me?
You can wear your clogs there. I love that.
Wear my clogs and hammer them on my feet and cloppity clop all over Sweden. That's me. This is me walking down the street.
Oh my god!
Jesus, what the hell is he doing?
Oh, he's slapping on his fucking water bottle.
He stopped.
Running down the street, my fucking clogs.
Oh my! Look, well, we can't finish on that. We've got another one.
No, I didn't even answer. I would lose my tools. Did you say lose the tools, Jeff? Or what'd you say?
Oh yeah, lose the tools. Knowledge is everything. I mean, experience underrated all the time. What about you, Racco? Yeah, you say you lose the tools?
Yeah, lose the tools.
Tools too, yeah.
Cody asks, would you rather sand Coco Bolo with no protection and not being able to wash before going to the bathroom, or only hand sand ironwood to shape with no power tools? Wow. So ironwood, no power tools, or Coco Bolo, zero protection, and you got to touch that wang before you use it. You got to touch the wang. Coco Bolo, you got to touch the wang. Go ahead.
Well, honestly, I would say I've been there with the Coco Bolo and had no problems. I didn't have Tom Moss's issues, so I'd probably be good with that. And because I need those power tools for the ironwood. I mean, you can obviously do it with sandpaper and files and rasps and stuff, but I've been there, done that already with the Coco Bolo, so I'm good.
So the Momasi,
yeah. I'd say the same thing. I was impervious to the Coco Bolo flu.
So you guys have are completely impervious to Coco Bolo wang problems.
I've never had a problem with Coco
no
Bolo.
No problem with the wang
ever.
Shower with that shit.
Admitted to hospital. What's wrong with you, Silver? I've got the Coco Bolo wang.
Oh my god! No problem. I'm impervious to Coco Bolo wang. No problem.
I worked for Bob Kramer. So when I worked for Bob, his standard go-to handle material.
Is it his wang then?
The wang time.
His standard go-to handle material was Coco Bolo. I've sculpted hundreds of Coco Bolo handles. And been like, all right, guy, take a piss.
Well, maybe, is it possible?
No pre-wash or anything, just straight in.
Maybe is it possible that before you worked for Bob Kramer to now, there has been some growth in the wang department because of the Coco Bolo? You have a permanent, permanent growth. Maybe it's like a permanent swelling that you're like, I'm not mad about it.
I was going to say, I was like, why would I be mad?
Yeah, you wouldn't be mad. I'd be like, oh, my dick is big. Yeah, Coco Bolo's vitamin Coco Bolo to the rescue.
Coco Bolo pills every day just to keep up.
Yeah, can you imagine? You know, all of a sudden, some dickhead in the knife-making community is going to start bottling up Coco Bolo pills to fucking pour on your wang.
Jesus Christ.
It comes in like a salt and pepper shaker. And you just
no, it'd be like a salt and pepper satchel. You just tear the sign in.
Little sprinkle. Oh, pull the pants open. Little sprinkle in the morning. That can't get much better than that. Gonna get the fuck out of here.
Right, that's a show. Thank you all for listening. Bye for now.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.